Like here.
Yeah, go ahead and give me a test now.
Alrighty, we got book, we got paragraph, we got 10 numbers divided by 3.
Rick, are you just looking at things and naming them?
Yeah. Lamp. I like lamp. Lamp. One of these days, we're just going to be so uncreative, we're going to name the podcast Lamp.
Let's hope that day doesn't come.
Brick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You're probably wanted for murder, so you should probably get out of time and lie low. Get out of town and lie low for a little bit.
What in the Abercrombie and Fitch is he talking about?
Mondays, everybody hates them. I hate them, you hate them, Garfield hates them. But do you know who doesn't hate Mondays? Martin Truex Jr., who just won his second of three NASCAR Cup Series races held on Monday this year, and we're here to talk about it. I'm Daniel McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jared Haas. Jared, what do you think about Mondays?
Well, I'm glad I'm back, but man, I mean, at least it gives us a little bit more fresher content to talk about for the Monday Blues. That was for the rest of the field with Martin Truex spanking by leading 254 laps of 301 that was ran on Monday.
Yeah, when Martin Truex Jr. wins a race, he wins a race.
Yeah.
I went and looked at his stats on racingreference.com, and after winning Sunday's race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, 16 of his 32 Cup Series race wins, he's led more than 100 laps.
Oh, yeah.
Four of them, he's led 200 or more laps. So if Martin Truex Jr. has led 100 laps in your race, there's a 50% chance he's going to win. So good odds if you're him, right?
It's like the William Byron thing. I mean, remember when William Byron, if he led more than 100 laps, he wouldn't win? It's like the opposite with Martin Truex Jr.
Or are you talking about Ryan Blaney? That's Blaney. Like he
I thought it was Byron. No, it was Byron was leading 100 laps. Blaney was the curse as well, too.
Yeah, Blaney just now won his first race, like the Coke Six, which was also on a Monday.
I was there. That was a long day.
But yeah. We're back after a week off talking about the latest Cup race, which was, you know, it wasn't the best race. There's been worse New Hampshire races. But Martin Truex Jr. finally getting a win at one of his three hometown tracks. He's a New Jersey native, and the meme with Martin Truex Jr. for like the last, you know, half a decade or so is that he has multiple home tracks, including New Hampshire Motor Speedway, which is in Loudoun, New Hampshire, Dover Motor Speedway in Delaware, and Pocono Raceway in Pocono, Pennsylvania. Wait, isn't Watkins Glen also considered one of his home tracks?
There's a lot of new. I mean, when you don't have a track nearby, I kind of had growing up in Northwest Illinois, you're like, Chicagoland's kind of hometown, but Iowa Speedway's kind of hometown feelish too. So, I mean, that's really in Martin Truex Jr.'s backyard. He made mention of, you know, there was a picture of him and his younger brother Ryan holding a bottle at a race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. So there's a lot of sentiment value. I mean, his father has raced there before too, Martin Truex Sr. So I think to come all together, have a Cup Series win in this stage of a career for Martin Truex Jr., there's a lot of emotions that came into that.
Oh, yeah. And he's come so close so many times.
Last year?
Yeah. He led like 172 laps last year, but then Christopher Bell wound up winning it. Truex crossed the 1,000 lap barrier at New Hampshire on Monday, which I believe places him third all time in laps led at that track. So a track he's very good at, but up until yesterday he could not break through, but he finally did it. But in general, Jared, what were your thoughts on Monday's marvelous race?
It put a good race overall, and I think the racing throughout, sure, Martin Truex ran away with a Martin Truex-esque race, but it wasn't like, you know, battle galore too, you know, there wasn't anything that, you know, they weren't spread out. And it wasn't like Homestead of 2022 where it's just you're trying to look for battles. There's battles throughout because of how New Hampshire's laid out with the flat type of track. You have to use the whole track to basically pass somebody. And we're near 2, 3, and maybe even 4 wide. It's a little bit harder to do that. So the racing lent itself well, even though it was just a classic Martin Truex wins race. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm disappointed this race is terrible. It wasn't like a Martinsville or North Wilkesboro race that's happened. It's not like the typical short tracks, but, you know, well, for what it was worth, it was a good entertaining race.
I mean, Truex was getting up to like 3-second leads, which with the next-gen car hasn't been typical, especially on ovals. Usually you're able to keep the leader within like second or so, but he was getting a ways out. Like the closest this race ever really was towards the end of stage two, when Ryan Blaney just like kind of all of a sudden started like, you know, reeling him in, but he wasn't able to actually get to his bumper to actually challenge for the win. But yeah, 254 laps led by Martin Truex Jr. Only two other drivers, Austin Dillon and Kevin Harvick, even reached double digits with laps led. Truex, he swept the stages, which I believe, I don't have the number on that, but I think he leads the series when it comes to sweeping the stages and also going on to win.
Well, also, too, he's got that regular season championship lead right now, too. He has a 17-point lead over William Byron. Like I said, you get, you know, yep, a bonus with that. So it's important to lead the regular season standings, and Truex build on his lead.
So, yeah, let's before we get into just a recap or rundown of the top 10, first off, we've got some audio clips from audio and video clips from Martin Truex Jr. After Sunday's race. If you're not aware, that Martin Truex Jr. comes from a racing family that's from New Jersey, from New England. His father, Martin Truex Sr., raced in like the Busch North Series and stuff like that up there. He had previously won at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Here's also what Truex had to say just about what his father did for him when it came to like just getting Martin's career a boost at New Hampshire back in the early 2000s, 23 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, thinking back to when I was, you know, a kid coming here and watching that and watching him win here in 94, and, you know, just those were my heroes growing up. The guys even that he raced against, you know, Kelly Moore and Dave Dion and all the Busch North guys back in the day that were legends of the Northeast, to watch him race with them, they were all my heroes. And then to start racing against them and win against them and then move up and keep doing things. I mean, I never would have thought, you know, when I was a kid coming here watching, I, you know, didn't even know I'd get to do that someday. So he really paved the way for me. He gave me great opportunities. Speaking of my father, you know, he was going to run a couple Busch North races in 2000, and I was going to run not the full season. I ran the first couple. And he ran here the first race of the year. And then after that race, he stopped racing altogether. He's like, you're too good. I need to give you my cars, the best equipment I have, and put everything behind you. And I'm like, why are you doing that? It doesn't matter. We're just going to go race. And he's like, no, because you can win here and keep going. And I didn't even know that. So I owe a lot of this to him. But we came back here that next time in July, race two at New Loudon that year. And he gave me his car and his engine, and I came here, sat on the pole, and led every lap one race. So, I mean, it's crazy to think back. That was 23 years ago. What has been between then and now? And to be right here again at this track with a huge accomplishing day, with a great performance from my team, just brings back a lot of memories of what this place means to me and to my career.
All right, so Jared, early this morning, we talked about how it felt like it was a quiet weekend when it came to headlines. We come out of this race with Martin having won, and really the only thing we're talking about is Martin Truex Jr. going to be racing again in 2024? If not that, we're talking about whether Chase Elliott is going to make the playoffs or not. But sitting here right here, we're about to play a clip from Truex where he was asked, hey, why not come back next year? You got three wins. You're leading the point standings. Why wouldn't you want to come back? It's like a real honest answer from Truex, where he says, "I don't know what I'm going to do." I'm really bad with big decisions. But here's what Truex said about having to decide whether he's 43, 44, right? Right in there?
Yeah, he's been in the Cup Series since 2006. He was, yeah, he's in his age 43 season.
So it's basically Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr. when it comes to age. So Harvick's retiring after this year, and Truex is now getting pressured on whether he's going to come back for one more year. But here's his answer when he was asked yesterday about, you're having all the success, you're having all this fun, why not come back next year?
Dan Gelson, Associated Press. Martin, Joe is just in here, Joe Gibbs, and he says, you're having fun, you're having a great year, you're winning races. Why wouldn't you come back next year?
Of course he says that.
So I guess that's the question. I guess that is the question. Why wouldn't you come back next
year? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I think, you know, I was talking out there to Claire, and I was like, you know, this sport isn't exactly what it appears to be sometimes. It takes a big commitment. My team is amazing. They deserve the very best driver, the guy that wants it more than anyone else. And I've been that guy. And I want to make sure that if I come back, I'm willing to do that. It takes a lot. It's not just show up at the track, drive the car, go home. Takes a lot. Takes a lot of commitment. It's a lot of travel. You know, a lot of time missing things with family and friends and all those things that I've done for, you know, 25 years. Do I want to keep doing it? And am I willing to, you know, sacrifice all those things again for my team? So that's just what I'm thinking about. I don't know that running good and winning makes a difference. Be pretty awesome to win the championship and walk off into the sunset. But, you know, I just don't really know. I don't really know. I'm bad at making big decisions. I told somebody out there, I was like, I've been looking at saltwater boats for five, six years. Love to fish, spend a lot of time on the water, and I haven't pulled the trigger on a boat because I just can't make up my mind on what I want. I'm just bad at big decisions. And I'm about to buy one maybe this week. So I wish I had more time to figure out what I want to do next year, but I don't. So I'll know soon, and you'll know soon.
You caught the lobster first and then got the boat.
Well, yes, but I don't. I won't fish for lobster on my boat. I'll fish for fish. Tuna. Catch tuna, not lobster. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a long-winded question, but I just don't know what to do.
Okay, so when I first read his answer, I read it before I actually saw the video of him talking, giving this answer. When I read it, I was like, okay, this guy's talking about buying a fishing boat. I don't think he's coming back next year. So when you read his answer or saw his answer, what did you think about where Martin Truex Jr. is going to wind up after this year?
I mean, it's tough. I remember last year, he kind of more or less made the announcement in the media bullpen in Nashville Super yeah. Speedway that he was returning mm-hmm. for the 2023 season. So there's a lot to weigh in with Martin Truex Jr., and I think also, too, it's tough with Kevin Harvick making his retirement tour. Mm. I mean, you see all the Harvick fanfare and stuff, and obviously, rightfully so, but Martin Truex is, I would say, had a decent career. Not as probably as better as Harvick's, but still probably a Hall of Fame-worthy career. And I think it's just tough to say, all right, am I in my prime still? Am I not? And I think Truex, this is, you know, he's contemplating, is this the right time to wind down for me, my career? Do I have more to prove? Do I want to go out on top with multiple championships? Mm-hmm. There's a lot to mull over, and, you know, opportunities are knocking on the door with Joe Gibbs Racing. We saw Saturday, John Hunter Nemechek, racer for Joe Gibbs Racing, yeah. He won his fourth race of the season. And he looks like the favorite. If Martin Truex Jr. Yeah. retires, steps away from the 19 car, John Hunter Nemechek looks like the favorite as well. So there's that outside pressure as well. So, you know, it's a tough decision that Martin Truex Jr. is going to make in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and like, if I were him, I probably would have retired after last year. You know, you finish the regular season fourth in the standings, but you miss out on the playoffs, and you don't want to race all year. That would have been it for me, probably. But he comes out now, this year, three wins, leading the point standings. Like we've always mentioned, he's knocking off, you know, bucket list wins like New Hampshire. I mean, you're at the top right now. So, like, if you're Truex, you know, taking out the championship part of it, If you go out when you're still proving yourself, right? I would think.
And it always feels like, too, every time Martin... It feels like we always had this discussion every time that Martin Truex Jr. wins. I think we thrust him in the spotlight because Martin Truex Jr., he's a very reserved driver, I would say, with especially his personality. I mean, he'll have some fun. He's not like Clint Boyer. But, you know, it's that he's in the spotlight now. Hey, guess what? You're 43. You're suddenly going to be the, you know, the older driver, one of the oldest drivers on the Cup Series circuit when Kevin Harvick retires. Is that still going to be a thing? Are you winding down? It's a lot of questions, a lot of inner reflection on that. And, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what decision he makes.
And like I said, he made a decision last year. He announced that at Nashville. We're past Nashville. So, I mean, we're already in a different area. I don't think reasonably he could just make the decision in November. All right, I'm retiring. He's going to have to, like, let people know.
Yeah.
But soon. And he said that yesterday. It's like, you'll find out soon. So
there's a lot of buildup that has to go on there, right? Because there has to be sponsors in place, yeah. Replacement drivers as well, too. That's why we've seen Silly Season shift more and more into the point where Silly Season almost more or less starts at the Coca-Cola 600. So, I mean, this is kind of, in more recent terms, this is more of a later decision that's coming from Martin Truex Jr., but, again, weighs heavy on him.
Like, I can't remember if we've talked about Truex big picture-wise. You said he's, you know, Hall of Famer. Like, once you win a Cup title, you're Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You're going in, eventually. Mm. But he's had a bizarre career. Bizarre. He made his Cup debut in 2006, gets his first win in 2007 at Dover on a Monday,
mm-hmm.
and then he doesn't win for 218 races.
Yeah.
2013
at Sonoma, I believe.
Yeah, 2013 at Sonoma, and then he didn't win again for 69 races when he won with Furniture Row Motorsports at Pocono, where we're going this weekend.
It's been, like I said, a bizarre career because he started out the protege, two-time Xfinity Series champion, back-to-back 04 and 05, get to the Cup Series, yep. Not really making that impact like Denny Hamlin was during that time. He was the same rookie class.
Well, yeah, but he got to DEI when they were starting
well, I
to
know
go down,
that, but so. Still, I mean, you have a two-time Xfinity Series champion during that prime. He, like I said, had stiff competition, so... You know, and then Bobby's dealing with Michael Waltrip Racing, kind of dealing with that downfall, and then just suddenly with Furniture Row and then making that a really competitive team into a championship team.
Yeah.
And then that parlayed it into a Joe Gibbs Racing deal, and, you know, he's still adding to his resume.
It, like, nowadays, you couldn't have the first a career that lasted a decade like Truex did. And expect to be around very long.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't happen. But he lucky him, he got to stay around long enough to really prove what he was capable of. In my opinion, he's like the modern-day Dale Jarrett. Dale Jarrett made a lot of starts, like back in the late 80s, early 90s, before he finally won with the Wood Brothers back in 91 at Michigan. And then 2 years later with Joe Gibbs Racing at the Daytona 500. And then he finally hooks up with Robert Yates Racing in 95.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, 95. And then, you know, it took off from there. So
the rest is history. And I think a little bit of it, I would say similar but different, kind of like A.J. Allmendinger, you know, still being in the sport so long with, you know, how many hurdles and obstacles that both of those drivers have dealt with. But, you know, Martin Truex Jr., he'll make his decision when he'll make his decision.
So, but, you know, he's been great for the sport. He's never been, like, a vocal guy. He's not a Kevin Harvick. He's not a
Denny Hamlin.
Not a Denny Hamlin. Not at all. Martin Truex Jr. is not going to host his own podcast. So, but yeah, like, you know, if Kevin Harvick's retiring. If Truex were to come back next year, he'd be the elder statements in the garage, but I don't think he'd be comfortable in that role. And I think it would just automatically default to Denny Hamlin. So, all right. Back to the Crayon 301 at New Hampshire. This was not sponsored by Crayola.
No,
this
is a manufacturing company. Let's run through the top 10, shall we?
All right.
You know, as mentioned before, Martin Truex Jr. won this race. Joey Logano finished in second. Kyle Larson finished in third. Kevin Harvick, fourth place for his number four car. Fifth was Brad Keselowski. Sixth was Tyler Reddick. Seventh was Denny Hamlin. Eighth was Bubba Wallace. Ninth was Austin Dillon. And rounding out the top 10, Chase Briscoe.
All right, so some notable stats from that top 10. Kyle Larson gets his 10th top 10 of the year in 20 starts. Hey, that's a good number, 50-50, until you get to the rest of his numbers. It is hitting a home run or striking out swinging for Kyle Larson this year. If he's not finishing in the top 10, of the remaining 10 starts, he has 60 DNFs. And four of those have been wrecks at super speedways. So Kyle Larson and super speedways do not mix. Brad Keselowski looked like he maybe could have, you know, had something for the leaders if he had got like a timely restart, but that didn't come to fruition. But he did earn RFK Racing's first top five at New Hampshire since 2016. That was when Greg Biffle got that. So that's kind of a home race for the Fenway part of RFK Racing. So
Brad Keselowski building a nice little program, and it's those baby steps, which is I think Keselowski understands.
And Austin Dillon, he finished ninth. That's his first top 10 since the Coke 600, so a while. And Chase Briscoe finished in 10th, and that was after he was the first car lapped down at the end of the second stage, so he bounces back. I think it was the first or second stage.
It was one of those stages. It was he got the free pass for the Eric Jones spin.
Okay. But then he bounces back to finish 10th. His first top 10 since Talladega 10 races ago. And he said on Twitter, I believe this morning or, you know, last night, that he's never been happier to finish in the top 10.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the struggles that Stuart Haas Racing has in that number 14 car.
It's been bad.
Well-deserved. Celebrate those little victories.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's top 10. So, let's talk a little bit briefly about Christopher Bell. Like, you know, you said at the top that it was either going to be kind of Truex or Bell. And then he gets kind of screwed over by mistakes on pit road by his pit crew. It sends him in the back twice. And then late in the race, how many laps?
Yeah, he like had the trouble with
on
lap 289.
So, yeah, he got loose, hits the wall. And
Martin Truex was not happy about that. he wants to make a new policy. See, that's the one thing Martin Truex Jr. is vocal about. Don't have your teammates wreck during the race while you're leading.
Yeah, don't wreck on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Christopher winds up finishing 29th after – did he lead it all? No.
No, he led one lap.
Oh, one lap.
He led the opening lap. But
okay, that's
kind
right.
Kind of more disappointing for the previous two winners of the – at Loudon, you know, you had Christopher Bell and his struggles, and then Eric Almirola, loose tire, thought he had it tight and wrecked out of it. So unfortunately, bad ends for them. But yeah, you know, mistakes happen. And I think, if I recall correctly, didn't Bubba Wallace's crew and Christopher Bell made a swap last year when Bubba Wallace was having their struggles?
I don't think it was a whole pit crew.
No,
swap.
It was like the right rear.
It was like select. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like the Toyota, one of their weaker spots, is the mistakes that happen on pit road with their crew members. So keep that in mind. Like I said, that storyline last year, Bubba Wallace having pit crew woes, there's a swap there. Like I said, mistakes, they hurt you.
But yeah, but here's the weird thing about like the point standings right now. So Martin Truex is first. He leads William Byron by 17 points. Christopher Bell is third, 62 points behind Truex. Bell hasn't finished in the top five since he won at Bristol Dirt.
Yeah,
back in like April, and he's third. He only has 7 playoff points, so he only has like 2 stage wins outside of that. He must be picking up, you know.
He's had those tough stretches. Yeah, he's had a tough stretch of races recently. I think finishing outside the top 15 for the last 3 races. But again, he, ironically, even though he finished 29th, he gained a position in the points.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But like if you look at the actual playoff grid after New Hampshire. William Byron still is leading the way, 4 wins, 22 playoff points. Martin Truex Jr.'s second. Kyle Busch is third, with 17 playoff points. Kyle Larson is fourth, followed by Ross Chastain, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney in seventh, Tyler Reddick in eighth, Christopher Bell in ninth, Joey Logano 10th, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is 11th. And so that leaves one, two, three, four, five spots on the 16-driver playoff grid. And right now it's Kevin Harvick is 12th, and he's 137 points above the cut line. Brad Keselowski is 13th, plus 108. Chris Buescher is plus 97. And then you get into the real...
Those three drivers you mentioned, you know, unless catastrophic things happen where, you know, they're just finishing last every race. Those three drivers are more or less in on points. But again, we're going to mention this 15th, 16th, all those drivers. Basically, there's a handful of drivers fighting for two spots.
Yeah. Bubba Wallace is currently 15th. He's plus two. Michael McDowell is plus one. And Daniel Suarez is in 17th, the first car outside of the top 16, negative one. So and after that, you got AJ Allmendinger, negative 20. Ty Gibbs, negative 41. And Alex Bowman, negative 42. I think the most surprising thing is McDowell being
in the one spot. That you haven't even mentioned. That's what? Also part of this equation.
What?
Negative 60 out, Chase Elliott.
I was going to bring him up.
That's an important factor right there because you got two spots and you got two Hendrick drivers. Even though I think both of the cars are in by owner points, both their drivers are outside the playoffs right now.
And we only have six races left in the regular season, folks. We're getting down to crunch time. So of those races that are left, before we kick off the playoffs at Darlington Raceway, we visit Pocono Raceway this weekend, followed by our return trip to Richmond Raceway. Then we go to Michigan, the Indianapolis Road Course, and then Watkins Glen, and then we close things out at Daytona International Speedway for the regular season finale. And Mr. Chase Elliott, who is winless this year so far, he hasn't won at any of these tracks except Watkins Glen. And he hasn't won on a road course in the next-gen era. So people keep wanting to call him the road course king. He was the road course king in the previous era.
This era's young, but you make a point there that, you know, this race kind of put a hiccup in Chase Elliott's playoff run, because before, when he was returning, he was notching those top five finishes. That's what he needed to do. Yeah. Finish 12th. You know, those are the little things that make that big difference in the playoff grade, especially for that push, trying to gain those points on the cutoff line.
But he's not getting, like, stage wins. He's not running up front.
Yeah.
I mean, I know last week's race he finished third or something, but it wasn't because he was up there all day. That's where we stand.
And to the point, I think that now with this race, I'm still a believer that Chase Elliott can get in by points. But now you're going to need one of those races that, you know, like a Martin Truex race that he just had at Loudon. Even if you don't win, that's a performance that he's going to need to do in order to get in. He's been consistently chipping away. It's just the question is, does he have the time to do it?
But running out of time, six races left. All right. So that'll do it for our discussion and recap of the race at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Let's go to our news of the week. All right, Jared. So, really, the biggest news of the last couple of weeks, given that there's been two pieces of news since we didn't record last week. We weren't here. Corey LaJoie signed a multi-year deal to stay with Spire Motorsports and drive.
That's on the works. That isn't official yet.
Oh, that's right. You're right. They haven't officially announced that, but the Athletic reported that's in the works. That it's expected that Corey LaJoie will come back to drive the number 7 for Spire Motorsports in a multi-year deal.
Spire is not selling their charter. That's the one thing they've kind of made clear with that, with the speculation with Andretti, Marco Andretti, rumors of them trying to join a NASCAR team, Marco driving for Spire's truck at Mid-Ohio. It, like I said, Spire Motorsports looks like, you know, their long-term deal is Corey LaJoie.
But they did also announce last week a new multi-year sponsor for, and right now I'm blanking on the name.
Gainbridge.
Gainbridge. Gainbridge.
That's the one with Mia Andretti.
Yeah.
Motorsport.
So yeah, that's a big deal for that team going forward. So far the big news for this week, which is looking forward to the race at the Indianapolis Road Course, feels like a really good follow up to the Chicago Street Course race. The Australian Supercar Invasion is officially underway in the NASCAR Cup Series, as Richard Childress Racing announced that Brody Kostecki, who competes in the Australian Supercar Series, will make his NASCAR Cup debut at the Indianapolis Road Course on August 20th, driving the number 33 Chevrolet.
And this is not the first time that Kostecki has made, you know, his move to the United States for stock cars as well. He ran some ARCA Menards Series East races in 2013 and 2014 with 16 starts.
Yep. So I couldn't find reliable stats for him in the Supercar Series. He has at least two wins, maybe.
There's like a confusing stat. I think that's when SVG, NBC and yeah, other people were reporting different stats what he had.
So, yeah, but no, this is, like I said, this is a follow-up to the SVG winning that historic race in the Chicago Street Course race. This feels kind of like back in like the mid-2000s when there was the open wheel invasion of NASCAR. Now we're getting the Australian invasion.
Again, when you built a car, kind of like what NASCAR's built, mm-hmm, is more or less like a supercar compared to like the old Cup Series bodies where it's made to turn left. You know, you see the Twisted Sisters. You know, now with these supercars, they're more, you know, there's not that aerodynamic advantage going left or right. That's why SVG's been able to perform so well.
And this comes as there's been reports that SVG could be leaving the Australian Supercars series to come race in NASCAR full time. There was an interview done with SVG's team manager where he said that he wouldn't stand in his way to come racing NASCAR. So, and if I'm NASCAR, yeah, let's get him over here as soon as possible to capitalize on what he was able to do earlier this month in Chicago. Because, I mean, I'm not expecting him to tear things up on ovals, but just having him be a constant presence in NASCAR after that Chicago win, I think would be a pretty big, not big, but a significant boost for the sport.
Well, he's proven that he's successful in the V8s, and he's already proven that he was successful in NASCAR.
So, 1-1. So, but no, that'll do it for our news roundup for this week. Now on to our preview of the HighPoint.com 400 at Pocono Raceway. Okay, Jared. They call it the Tricky Triangle. It's a 2.5-mile racetrack up in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. And guess what? It's a triangle. It's the only track like it on the circuit and the only track like it in the world. It's a very flat track with three corners that were designed after three different tracks, two of which I don't think exist anymore.
Milwaukee's one of them.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, Milwaukee's still there, and it's even on the schedule.
Yeah, it is. Okay, you're right. Thanks for correcting me. So one turn's based off a corner at Indianapolis, mm-hmm, one corner's based off of the Milwaukee Mile, and then the third one, Trenton's?
I think that sounds right.
Trenton Motor Speedway? I think that was in New Jersey.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
But this has the longest front stretch in NASCAR.
And probably one of the widest, too.
Yeah. If you have not watched a race at Pocono Raceway, restarts are incredible.
Remember when I was saying 2, 3, 4 wide at Loudoun?
Five.
They get five and six wide there. Yeah. They fan out because they had the space to do it.
Historically, Pocono has not been my favorite track. Especially in the days when it was 500-mile races. Pretty much each year we go to Pocono, you reach that point in the race where somebody, sometimes me, will send out the obligatory, hey, remember when this race was 500 miles? It's like Dover. Like, you lose all sense of time when watching
a race. Hey, remember when this was a doubleheader?
I like that.
I like that, too.
I wish they kind of.
I don't hate that, considering the fact you can put two races, divide it up, and like I said, if you got two races,
different links.
Yeah, two different races there, then you have a free weekend.
Yeah.
See, I was in favor of that too, and I was disappointed that they don't have a doubleheader that they had like they had before during the pandemic in 2021. But hey, like I said, we still got a race at Pocono, a very unique track. But again, I think the picks are going to tell you why I'm going in a certain direction. If you look in the back, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 races, previous 10, obviously the last race, Toyota would have won that, but they were disqualified. And the only other manufacturers that won a race was Alex Bowman in his Chevy and then Kevin Harvick in his Ford. So Toyota has been pretty dominant here at the Pocono Raceway.
But yeah, let's touch on that briefly. So last year, Denny Hamlin won this race.
And Kyle Busch finished second.
Until they didn't.
Yeah.
This race weekend last year marked the first time that a race winner in the Cup Series had been straight up disqualified in the modern era. It hadn't happened. If a team won a race and they failed inspection, oh, here's a point penalty, here's a fine, get to keep the trophy.
Yeah.
Not anymore. If you get disqualified, you lose the win. You get placed dead last if that you can. But he couldn't finish dead last because Kyle Busch, who finished second, also failed inspection.
Now let's remind you, Chase Elliott led zero laps.
Zero.
And he seemed like, I don't want to call it like a sore winner with that race, but he was not really, I don't want to say pleased with his win, but he's just like,
no.
I finished third. Why am I getting this trophy?
Yeah, the official top three finishers of last year's race were Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, Daniel Suarez. None of them led a lap.
Mm-mm.
The top finisher who led laps was Christopher Bell in fourth, who had 14 laps led, and then Kyle Larson was fifth with 18 laps led. I don't have strong specific memories of this race last year except for what happened between Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain, in turn
one,
where he just might have kind of just pushed
him, used him up the way,
and wrecked him, and then also wrecked Kevin Harvick. So that was the most memorable thing that happened.
Hamlin spun in that race as well too.
Don't remember
in turn two
that
early in the race.
Okay, maybe
I remember seeing the replay. I'm like, wow, yeah. Denny Hamlin spins early on and then causes this action. And
okay.
Then,
okay. I do remember that now.
Yes.
But no. Yeah. So, but I do think that the race at Pocono is helped by the next-gen car significantly. I think it was a watchable race, which for, like I said, a long time, Pocono races were just not watchable. The best Pocono race I can remember of like the last decade was when Ryan Blaney got his first career win over Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
That was a good run to the finish. Then you had 2 years ago, it looked like Kyle Larson was sailing to the win.
And then the tire blew.
I was sitting in a bar in downtown Springdale, Arkansas. The race was on TV. It was like, oh, Alex Bowman's going to win this. I mean, Kyle Larson's going to win this. And then all of a sudden I look up, Kyle Larson's in the wall and Bowman's running by for the win. So that was like one of the most surprising race outcomes of the last few years because that looked like it was over.
Yeah.
And then, but it's not over until it's over.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So who are you taking to win the highpoint.com 400, Jared?
I'm going to take the layup, Denny Hamlin.
Okay. Okay. He got his first two career wins there. So he
swapped the races in 06, yeah.
Yeah, and
he won there in 2020, he won there in 2019.
So okay, he's got recent success. Okay, yes. you're going Hamlin. I'm going for a guy who he only finished third because of the disqualifications last year, but he did finish like second there back in like 2018. So he does like Pocono on some level. I'm gonna take Daniel Suarez.
Pretty interesting pick.
I don't know. It's got a feeling. So, but yeah.
Is it that feeling that I had Trackhouse Racing was going to win a race this year?
Wasn't, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going with my, like, again, I hate making picks you know, 5 days before practice.
Yeah, that's, so, you know, ask us after practice. We'll give you more fine detail. Yeah. But looking into this weekend, I still see a Toyota emblem and so, parking in victory lane.
So, okay, with these six races left in the regular season, where do you think Chase Elliott is most likely to win?
I mean, you've mentioned it. I think Watkins Glen is going to be his best shot right there to win a race.
Okay, so as of right now, does he make the playoffs?
He's got 10 points to make up every race. You know, I think he still can. It's still, I would have said a couple weeks ago, likely scenario, with he would take it away. Now with Loudon, there's a little bit of doubt, but I still think he can get it in the playoffs.
Okay, I don't think he's going to make it. Right now, I don't think he's going to make it. Unless he pulls one out of the hat like a Daytona. So
that's why we run these races.
Yep. So, all right. That will do it for this week's episode of Dropping the Hammer. I'm Dale McFadden. You can reach me on Twitter at Dale McFadden, all one word. I am technically on this thing the new kids are calling Threads, but I'm not using it that much until they get like a chronological timeline of the people you actually follow.
Yeah.
So, so same thing there. It's D McFadden on there, I believe. So.
Well, you can find me at Real Jared Haas on Threads or Twitter as well. Same username, very simple enough, but also verified, so easy to find.
And also, please like, subscribe to the podcast, help it make it easier for people to find us. And also, if you are interested in general news coverage of Arkansas and the central Arkansas area, please subscribe to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, which you can do at a special rate. If you find the webpage for this episode of the podcast on our website, there's a special link to an offer where you can get the first 2 months of your subscription to the Gazette for $5 a month each. So that'll do it for us. I'm Dale McFadden.
This is Jared Haas.
We'll see you next week as we recap Pocono and then get ready for a race at, where are we racing?
At Richmond, but I will be at a different race.
Road America.
Yes.
So
from and then we'll see you next time.
All right, take care. I'm Dale McFadden. Jared Haas. Have a great week.